Freedom Beans, broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level, at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Michael Dean.
Yeah.
Can you feel it?
Yep.
Steve Miller.
Yep.
Oh, I feel it.
Yep.
All right.
Turn it up. Not the
Freedom
volume.
Beans.
Temperature. Turn the temperature up.
Freedom Beans is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Filthy. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Filthy governments. So, what's up, James Babb?
Oh, man. It's great to be with you.
I'm
totally excited to have a special guest fiend with us tonight, Mr. Steve Miller.
He's great. We're still working out before you said how great it is. I'm still hearing echoes. So you got to turn down a little bit more. This is a teaching hospital here. We can do this on the air. Yeah, it's gone. It's perfect. So what's it like to be here, Steve Miller?
If I were any better, I'd be twins right now. There would be not enough goodness within me.
Well, you're two
to
Millers.
Be able to hold.
You're two Millers strong.
Yeah.
Is that your real name?
I'm a two Miller chap.
So when's the last time you stuck a needle in your arm?
In my own arm?
Yeah.
Years.
Oh, are you
I was
a phlebotomist?
2007 or so? Yeah.
Are you a phlebotomist? Like you did it today to someone else?
No, I didn't do it today to somebody else. However, I've been in situations where I had to EpiPen people. Right. I don't know if EpiPen's a verb, but people were having allergic reactions and I had to stick needles in them.
I have an EpiPen right here on my desk. I keep it next to my gun and I don't leave the home without either of them. EpiPen.
When can we expect guns and EpiPens, the road to freedom?
I don't know, but I was considering I've never actually had to use it, but I was considering what it would be like to abuse it, like to use it like coffee, like to just have a bucket of them and just like stick them in my neck every 20 minutes or something. Actually, I think
probably wouldn't be that bad.
Davy Barker did a picture of what that would look like of me doing that. It was pretty nice. Yeah.
I don't recommend that.
No. So, we're going to talk about, I don't know. I don't want to get that serious that quick. I want people to know the majesty of what Steve Miller is before we talk about what's wrong with today's politics and how they affect needle exchanges. You know, when I was going to needle exchanges back in the 80s and 90s in San Francisco, there wasn't any government involvement. It was illegal, and it was a couple operating it out of a baby carriage. Like, they looked like they were out pushing their baby around Skid Row. But
whoa.
And the chick, and they were like recovering addicts who just raised money from other recovering addicts. And the chick was diabetic, so she could get needles, you know, from the pharmacy. And they didn't do a lot of them at first. They just did, like, you know, 20 a day or something. But they did it out of a baby carriage down the Tenderloin and the Mission and Civic Center. It's pretty funny. But they came to us, you know, which was, now that the government's in the way and the government thinks they have to regulate things to make them better and make them perfect and leave them a little better than they found it, they make it worse. And, like, you have horror stories, right?
I have a couple horror stories.
Yeah.
The first week I lived here, my mom said, well, don't come crying to me when you see a bunch of dead bodies on the street.
Hey, back
and
off
then
a
2 days
bit,
later,
mic, just a little bit. It's a little crunchy.
Huff it?
Yeah, huff it. Unhuff it.
There we go.
All right. Cool.
Better?
Yeah.
Cool.
So your mom, you're shooting dope with your mom, and what'd she say?
Yeah, we're sitting there in a gazebo shooting dope, me and my mom.
Yeah.
And she says, well, it's not going to be too long before you see just dead bodies piled up on the street. And I was walking to the post office, and what do I see but clear as day, a corpse right there on the street. And I was like, you know what? She said dead bodies, plural. And this is only one. So screw you, Mom.
So you had to go kill somebody?
Is that from the drugs, or was it from just like a post office random shooting kind of thing?
No, that was definitely somebody that had overdosed right by the post office. And that was only the first dead body that I saw, though. There's a bridge right by my house. Jim's been there, where it's an extremely popular bridge to shoot up under. And when the cops are running low on paperwork at the end of the month, they'll go down there, arrest a few people, like, arbitrarily get their paperwork done and leave it for another month, and bodies can sit down there for God knows how long until they start to smell and someone complains. Then somebody will look busy and get down there and clean up the body.
Yeah. Wow. Welcome to Kensington.
Welcome to Kensington. You can see this all in Drugs Inc. Philadelphia. If you ever watch Drugs Inc. Philly, it's on YouTube. You can
I love
see
that show.
Everything we deal with.
Yeah, I watch that show. I watch that show and I root for the bad guys, pretty much.
Oh, I always root for the bad guys.
Well, they're not really bad guys, though. They're just, you know, either addicts or people providing, you know, providing a service.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much. One of the very few cop firings happened in my neighborhood because one cop had Snapchatted these three kids standing in front of a corner store. And the Snapchat that went out to all the other cops had the caption that said, preparing for their future, implying that these, like, three Puerto Rican kindergartners were going to grow up to become drug dealers. And that same week, another cop ripped off a black kid's testicle. He was Ouch. Walking home from basketball practice. They were doing a search. He ripped off, like, part of his scrotum. Now, which of those two cops do you think got fired? The cop testicle ripper?
The picture.
Yeah, definitely the Snapchatter. Yeah. Don't abuse anyone's Snapchat. That's ridiculous now.
James?
See, I've been saying all this these nice things about Philadelphia on the show, and now you come on and you're like, oh, bring out all the dirty laundry, you know?
Well, Jim, don't. Okay, so Jim knows my city councilwoman, and we went to her house one time during an eminent domain dispute. And I think that anybody who goes and sees the YouTube of James Babb with Maria Quinones Sanchez will get a feel for exactly how it is in this town.
Now, you said she's your city council person. Does that mean that you've bought her, or is she on your payroll now? Because just wondering how you get a city council person.
I want one.
You can get one in an auction. The most common way, though, is that it's free with any purchase at certain stores.
Okay. Certain stores, you said?
Like, yeah.
Like, not mom and pop stores, but, like, you know, a Walmart comes with
a city council. They're secondhand stores. These aren't the first time these people have been owned. Yeah. You smell them, see how bad they are, look for any holes, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of them, some city council. Now, listen, I don't want to, you know, be too insulting to Philadelphia city council people. Sure, you know, you can buy them, right? Because, of course, every government person is for sale. But some of these guys aren't cheap. I mean, you might have to, like, pull out, like, dozens of dollars to get favors from them.
Yeah, you have to remember, everything is extremely cheap in this town. I purchased my house for $15,000.
Wow.
You can get around. I mean, a subway pass will cost you $80, and you won't need a car. And, yeah, the cheapest thing of all, though, is human life. That goes for the cheapest.
The house costs less than the bus pass.
Yeah, the house costs less than the house was free with bus pass purchase.
Is the house in a really horrible, scary neighborhood?
You can see my house in Drugs Inc. Philly.
Well, you would never see
my
house.
I don't know if that says anything like one way or the other.
You'd never see my house in a top drug show. Never. I live on I'm 51 and I'm the youngest person on my block, and it's all like grandpas and grandpa. I mean, the noisiest thing on my block is, like, you know, the grandkids come over for, you know, hot dogs on the weekends for the neighbors. And
isn't Dick Cheney your neighbor, Michael?
Dick Cheney was born in Nebraska and grew up in Casper, where I live, eight blocks away from me in the big yellow house down by Walmart. But
there are blocks.
Why wouldn't there be blocks? Are they all destroyed in your town? Did they just burn them up with prairie,
like one prairie to the next?
Yeah, little house on the prairie. Well, we are surrounded by prairie. Like, if you're in Casper, and now he owns like most of Jackson and Yellowstone, I think, and lives with the bears, and, you know, has a ranch the size of Delaware guarded by U.S. Marines, probably. So we're in the same state, but really it's like, that's not the same state. It's not the same state any more than, like, Philadelphia is the same as Pennsylvania, you know? And I lived in Pennsylvania. I went to the Church Farm School, now known as the school at Church Farm in Glen Locke, Pennsylvania, Exton, Paoli. It's like three towns in one. I went to that school there for 4 years, got kicked out for calling the headmaster a fat, bald, overly Christian old fart. But, you know, lived there. That is Pennsylvania. That's the, you know, anything between Philly and Pittsburgh and the bottom 50, southern 50 miles of Pennsylvania might as well be Alabama or Kentucky.
What did you call the headmaster again?
Fat, bald, overly Christian old fart.
That was a standard morning greeting at the schools where I taught in Philadelphia.
It was not. No, actually, I wrote a letter to Mick Jagger and told him to buy the school and make it a hip place to be. And in the letter, I said that. I didn't, like, greet him with that every morning, like, hey, Dr. Schreiner, you fat, bald, really Christian old fart. No, I wrote it a letter, sent it between 11th and like 12th grade during the like sent it on the way out the door for summer after 11th grade. It got returned unopened. It had the school's address on the envelope, but I did not put my name. So the school secretary opened it to see whose box to put it in, and she read it. And like, I got kicked out in the summer while I was home. Like, please don't come back, Mr. and Mrs. Dean. Have your son not come back. We would appreciate it. Thank you.
See, yeah. I thought Mick Jagger got the letter and then gave you up to the school.
He would.
I thought that was where the story
was. I don't know why
headed.
I thought he was hip, man. He was, yeah. Well,
but, you know, here's a key difference. You can tell that he wasn't a student at a Philadelphia school. Do you know how?
How?
He was able to write a letter.
Yeah, there you go. So, and I handwrote it.
Yeah, there's a big difference there.
And Barack Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink. I think we're required by FCC fiat or something, maybe just the rules of talk radio, to say that once an hour. So there you go.
Keeps people interested.
Yeah. I can smell his feet from here. Philadelphia is not too far from D.C.
Yeah. So so you're a funny guy. You're known to be a funny guy.
I do what I can.
Yeah. And you... You did a little website called hashtag please donate. Before we go to the ad break in a couple minutes here, tell me really quickly what that is.
So hashtag please donate is something that I made as a response to this phenomenon that's going on within the Liberty movement of people.
I took a Liberty movement tonight. I never go on air without a Liberty movement.
Yeah.
It's I the feel way horrible if I don't.
There's this cult of personality that develops around certain people within the Liberty movement where they beg for money constantly. And they think that having an opinion and then begging for donations is a valid career. That what you just do is you have a podcast, you put it out once a week, and then you spend the remainder of your time begging for money. Yeah. And what caused me to go from person that was mildly annoyed by this to person who had a page about this is an incident that happened with one talk show host continually making up stories
who
and coming up with these fake scenarios.
Whose name
shall not be named.
He shall not be named because I've signed a contract that I won't. But we will talk about the whole phenomenon in general. The things you got to do to be on talk radio, it's a little different than having a podcast. We'll be back. Please donate.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
What's up, Elk? Go ahead. We're back in the air. This is the Freedom Fiends, the show where we're too busy talking to do a talk show. We're talking to James Babb, and former Pontiff lover, Steve Miller.
So I never loved the Pontiff.
Oh, you weren't Catholic. You're the other one.
Lutheran. Being Lutheran is a little bit like being Catholic without the thrill of a potential molestation.
Yeah. My wife's people are all from Minnesota, and so is GCN.
Yeah, they are a boring folk.
Who, Lutherans? Minnesota Lutherans?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. But
I went to a Lutheran potluck yesterday. And you could tell that the potluck was the most exciting thing they'd done in months. Like the fact that they were going to be there with dishes made by other people.
Yeah.
Was just the height of exhilaration.
Shepherd's pie.
Mm. Hey, who doesn't
potato
love that?
Salad. Come on. Yeah. Hey, Protestants make some good comfort food, man. So, so before you nailed your, demands to the church door and quit going to seminary, what changed and what do you believe now?
What changed was that I got tired of seminary folk. That I got there and I was like, I thought that people put on this big face when they're in seminary, that they're going to be this clergyman, so they have to act like they have everything figured out, and they don't. And the professors, in a lot of cases, didn't believe anything that they were saying, and they knew that they were there because they were tenured. And
it's a weird career option. You know, it doesn't pay very well. It's like, I would think people would only do it if they believe in the core of their soul, man.
how I always describe like seminary.
Isn't that politics? Yeah. You say a bunch of garbage that you don't believe, but it keeps politics, you employed, and you move
politics,
on.
In politics, you can rise up to the point of being rich and powerful. You really can't in the church. I mean,
no.
Are you kidding?
Not many. You have a better chance in politics.
Do you have a way better chance
that, that dude has that was just in Philly?
Yeah, but I don't think that Steve Miller ever had a shot at being Pope or even Bishop.
Yeah, Jim, how long have you known me, and how great would you say my odds of rising to high-level church administration would be? Come on now. And,
I'd say better than mine.
And put it this way.
I met you at Occupy. Let's get real.
I've never met a bishop, even, but I know, like, five personally. I've had, like, three state senators in my house. I know, like, 15 more from New Hampshire. I've gone shooting with the governor of Wyoming. Like, these are actual people, not, like, the Pope doesn't even exist, as far as I'm concerned. I've never seen him.
Have you ever gone hunting with Dick Cheney?
No.
Don't.
No. He'll shoot you in the face and make you apologize.
See, if you were Kim Davis, then you'd meet the Pope.
Ugh.
Didn't the Pope have to release some statement like, no, I met her, but it's not like that. It wasn't. Whoa.
Was he having an affair with her?
Yeah, evidently, like, she said, oh, I met with the Pope, and everybody's like, oh, you're just a liar, you're just a loser, you're lying. Then the Pope said, yeah, we actually did meet with her, but then, you know, they had to specify, but we weren't, like, didn't mean we were agreeing with her or anything.
I thought he did agree with her.
I don't know.
I thought he told her she could, you know, defy any law she wanted as long as it's for the church.
That may be in question. Maybe that's part of the dispute. I don't really pay attention, so I just kind of caught the headlines from this. So,
Steve, I was hoping you were one of those, like, my favorite kind of ex-clergy or clergy, I guess, would be the kind, like, from Grapes of Wrath, like the kind who still absolutely believe there's a God but thinks God hates them. Are you of that kind?
Well, isn't how far removed is that from the Westboro Baptist Church, though? Because they think God hates everything.
They're not real. They don't exist.
Really exist. Yeah, they don't have more than one outlet. I would think that in order to be considered a legitimate religion, you have to be able to franchise.
Legitimate religion? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
What?
Well, put it this way, most religious people don't like them, so that probably makes you illegitimate.
Oh, I would consider myself as illegitimately religious as they come.
All right. So how long ago did you leave the seminary? How far into it were you? And what do you do now?
I have a master's in divinity, and So I have a church that's mainly for tax purposes so that I don't have to.
You shouldn't say that on air.
Oh, yeah. I mean, here's the thing. My property taxes on the building that is the church, before I declared it as a church, were $81 a year. So if someone's listening to Freedom Fiends and...
I used to actually own...
And they get me for $81 this year. You know what? Here's your $81.
I used to own some property that the property tax yearly was $6.50. It was a half an acre of land in rural New Mexico that I'd never seen that my grandpa won in a poker game. And he gave to my dad, and my dad gave to me. I ended up selling it and buying an AK-47, but I was intrigued that I owned land that the property tax is that cheap. All right, we're going to go.
Then they struck cemetery plots.
Right, they struck oil on the land the next day.
Yeah, I'm sure. They shot it with the AK, and oil came bubbling crude.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends. An invigorating alternative to those other shows.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends. We're going to talk about Grace Fidel. You guys have never heard this myth, have you? I was talking during the break. It's Grace Fidel was a little girl from my hometown of Westfield, New York, who was looking at a picture of Abraham Lincoln when he was alive and running for president. And she was up late at night, as young ladies like to do with pictures of powerful men. She was alone with this picture, and she spilled some lamp oil on the picture, and it looked like he had a beard, because he didn't have a beard then. And she wrote him a letter. She's from my town, Westfield, New York, where I grew up. She wrote him a letter and said that he should grow a beard because he'd be more handsome, and then ladies would tell their husbands to vote for him, and he'd get to be president. And he did, and he did. And then when he had his beard and was president, when he was coming through Westfield, New York, he stopped on the train and came out and met Grace Bedell. And there's a statue of this meeting that went up in the last 10 years. And my dad was on the committee, like with his Rotary Club, to, like, finance and make this happen, because it was important, apparently.
So everybody knows what one little girl can do.
Yeah. if you just get the ladies to vote for you, yeah. The whole thing is
so ridiculous. Basically, the Civil War is her fault.
It is.
And now there's a monument where people can go and look at her and be like, oh, that's horrible.
Horrible little girl. She's like 10. I know.
And that terrible little girl.
And it's actually on the spot of the movie theater that they tore down, where I used to go see movies when I was a kid. And I miss that movie theater. But, you know, Grace Bedell. So you're not sure that Lincoln existed. That's what I heard.
Yeah, there are definitely a Lincolnist in the world. I don't know how compelling their arguments are, but there are people definitely out there that do not believe in Lincoln.
And I said, I'm sure he exists. And James said, how? And I said, because there's a statue of him. And James said, well, there's statues of Apollo. So, yeah, yes. Tell me the theory of a Lincolnism.
So the first a Lincolnist I met was a comedian who decided he was an a Lincolnist after having a long fight with somebody who didn't believe the earth was round. And he was like, well, all right, like, how could I apply this logic to other things in everyday life? And then he decided that he didn't believe in Lincoln anymore. And he would say, like, well, you know, why do you believe in Lincoln? And people would say, well, there's not slaves walking around. He's like, that's a terrible reason to believe in Lincoln.
Yeah.
And what have you. There's also a Facebook page, Did Abraham Lincoln Really Exist?, which is worth checking out.
Interesting.
Also, the safe space for Abraham Lincoln survivors, which is specifically for libertarian survivors of Lincoln-based violence.
Oh, I thought it was for little girls who'd been touched in bad places by Lincoln.
Show me on the doll where Lincoln touched you.
Show me on the statue where Lincoln touched you. So
it was on my lamp oil beard.
Yeah. So let's see. Can I even go to this topic? I don't know. Man, I don't know.
Just too heavy. I mean, we've already discussed hard-hitting issues such
something
as a Lincolnism.
Something else. Yeah, okay. Somebody quit the Fiends this week, and I'm very sad about it. Yeah, Diana Davison quit the Fiends. And she and I are still friends. Still like her a lot. But she just put up a new video. Called Brave the World versus Men's Rights, and I'm tweeting it right now, and it might say a bad thing about one of the current fiends who may not always be one of the fiends. There's a couple fiends who are kind of under the microscope with me, on probation in my brain. Yeah, it's been a weird week, man. But if you want to see skip the fiends and go see a good video, go look at Brave the World versus Men's Rights on the Feminism LOL. It's about Julia Turnowski. Is that how you say her name? You guys know her?
Julia.
Yeah.
Turiansky.
Yeah. Yeah. James is going to hate me. James.
Question, in case this ever becomes an issue for myself, what happens when you're on fiend's probation? Do you give urine tests to make sure there's fiend phone in people's system? Or
make sure there's fiend phone in your system?
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to do drug tests to make sure you're on drugs.
No, your drug test just—it's
got nothing to do with drugs, man. It's I assume everyone in the Fiends except me and Davi is on drugs all the time.
Not me.
He's a religious fanatic, and I'm a loser.
Well, in recovery. Some people are like maybe on probation and are getting like random testing, and they
that
may
kind
not.
Of probation. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No,
yeah, you're PO.
No, you're on probation right now to become a host. You don't know that, but you are.
Oh, okay.
I'm not. You're not on here. You're not on here to be interviewed. You're on here to replace people I'm firing.
I was on the
taking our jobs.
It does not pay, but it, you know, you were going to be in the seminary anyway, so you're used to that.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Good thing about seminary is that it's law school for lazy people. Like, you could just say whatever you want, and no one's ever going to be like, show me evidence.
Well, you have to say it in a very pious voice, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And you got to bury it in a bunch of words.
So tell me more about this Lincoln thing. So is this something that your friend made up to show the silliness of flat earthers, or did it exist before that?
Well, he started it like as a joke, and then people were like, people messaged him and were like, you know, I've always had questions about Lincoln.
He's one of the more mysterious presidents.
Yeah.
And tyrannical, but.
Well, but what about William Henry Harrison? The way he just came and went in 30 days like that, don't you think that's a little suspicious?
This is a Simpsons song.
Most successful presidency ever.
Yeah. He's the best president.
Yeah.
Yeah. William Henry Harrison, you know, died in 30 days.
I just typed it into Google, and I just typed, did Lincoln, and Google filled it in the rest by saying, really exist.
There you go. The people want to know. We're asking the hard questions. Did Lincoln exist?
You know,
did
what? Lincoln not I'm not exist? Getting that until I type EXIST. I'm getting, did Lincoln really say that? Did Lincoln really end slavery?
Believe in vampires.
Believe in vampires. That's because there's a cartoon called Abe Lincoln Vampire Slayer, isn't there?
It's live action. It's not a cartoon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were really serious, and I went and saw that in the theater, which I'm not exactly proud to admit.
So let's go back to unless you have a compelling more on Lincolnism, which I think really it's important that we're bringing up the question, and I think this could be an ongoing 20-part series.
Because here's the thing: today it's asked on Freedom Fiends. Tomorrow there's a good chance it might be asked in the Republican presidential debate. candidates.
Yeah.
These Lincoln deniers. Lincoln deniers.
Let me see his birth certificate. I think he's really born in Canada, not Northern Illinois. Yeah.
He's one of them Muslims. He was a Muslim.
Look at the beard.
Well, you know, Jefferson had a Quran. There was the one Muslim congressman, Ellis, is that his name? Was sworn in on Jefferson's Quran. So, I mean, I think by today's standards, if you got a Quran, there's something wrong with you, you know, whereas others, just Jefferson liked to, you know, he liked to look at all the questions and have, you know, relations with all the slaves.
Yeah. He probably had a Quran and a Korean.
Okay. So I want to hear more about, hashtag don't donate. I mean, please donate.
Hashtag please donate. Right.
Here's my advice. Everyone should just, if you really want to make a difference in liberty, keep your day job, man. We got 20 freedom fiends. None of us are making a living at liberty. And that's how we're able to like do a quality show 7 days a week and not advertise stupid things and not compromise. And, you know, when somebody doesn't like one of the co-hosts and they're controversial, we don't have to fire them. We can fire our hosts that don't like them instead, because we don't have advertisers. So
But the problem with that is that it requires a small amount of burying your ego, where you have to put down your head and actually work a job that provides some sort of service or good that people are going to want, as opposed to buying a bunch of Facebook followers.
You have to actually be a capitalist instead of just talk about capitalism?
Right.
Yeah.
You talk about capitalism and ostracism and shame-based and how great everything is. And then when people stop giving you money, then you whine and beg for more.
Yeah.
We have seen a pattern there, haven't we?
Yeah. Definitely.
But that's not to be said that there aren't, you know, that there isn't like a legitimate like role. Like I look at, you know, there's a very few, you know, people that really do that well, and they really produce a lot of material, and they do exist on donations. And, you know, but I think there's room in our community for like three of those people. Okay. And beyond that, there's just not enough money or people that really, you know, give a hoot to go around. So, yeah, don't quit your day job is my advice as well.
Give a hoot. Don't quit your day job.
It's similar to ministry. I mean, I knew a bunch of people, obviously, that are making a slight amount of money begging for donations, doing ministry. But most of them are just doing it because that's what they do.
The thing about living a vow of poverty, I mean, if you come into my home, I definitely don't look like I'm living a vow of poverty. I've got a lot of stuff. But when you look at it closer, it's pretty much all stuff for doing Liberty, you know, media. And, you know, other than that, I spend like $100 a year on clothes and probably $1,000 a year on microphones. So,
oh yeah, that's kind of my Monty Award right next to my shrine to Ron Paul.
What's a Monty Award?
Oh, a Monty Award is given by the Montgomery County Libertarian Party for outstanding contribution to the cause of liberty, and I won for the arts for Federal Detention, the musical, my musical about Adam Kokesh.
Ooh, are you pro-Kokesh? This is
a very prestigious award, and that was an extremely successful project, by the way. Is that on YouTube or something where people can enjoy that, Federal Detention, the musical? You got to tell us more about that.
Certain parts of it are. So everyone's a little bit statist. The one song from it is on YouTube. There are other parts that are, I think one of our rehearsals might be on YouTube, but we didn't get the entire thing because it's Philadelphia and the person I hired to record decided to instead go smoke meth. Instead of
well, that happens. But you know, let's back up and just say, what is Federal Detention?
Back in my day, when I was in bands, people could smoke meth and get their job done. They didn't like miss their job. What happened to those people?
Cue the smokes meth still does his job meme.
Yeah.
So Federal Detention, the musical. Federal Detention, the musical was.
Or I'll fire you.
Yeah. Get on it right now.
Just kidding.
I have the quickest meme thumbs in the land, Michael Dean. You don't realize this, but I can have a meme made Darby in 9 seconds.
Darby Barker usually has them done before the end of the segment, even in a short segment.
Well, but in fact, Steve already finished making that meme while he was finishing the sentence talking about it.
Let's see it. Post it. Pics or it didn't
Boom.
Happen.
Right now. Post it right now.
So Federal Detention, the musical, it was a correct me if I'm not really giving it justice, but it was an original musical that told the story of Adam Kokesh and N.A. Poe getting arrested at Smokedown Prohibition.
Correct. 100%.
Worms.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Hey, this is Squizcar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1¼ inch. Now they're 1¾ inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is the Freedom Fiends. This is Mr. Michael Dean. I'm going to bow out after this segment. Save my throat. Steve Miller doesn't know the majesty of my medical problems over the past year.
I know about your lung.
Yeah, my lung. Yeah. Can I have one of yours? Are you healthy? Do you smoke? I'll let you be on my show if you give me a lung. Okay, so if you go to the Freedom Fiends site now and look on the page of co-host in Showtime, Steve Miller is now on here. He passed the audition on the show. And now my lungs are getting better. I used to feel like I was being waterboarded all the time. And now I just feel like I ran in the winter without warming up all the time, which sounds pretty bad, but it's way better than feeling like you're drowning all the time. Oh, and you know, Derek Freeman, Derek J is listening tonight because Steve Miller Miller's on. He said, that guy's hilarious. Well, that's not how he talks, but he said that you're hilarious.
I do what I can, and hello to Derek J, and hello to Mike, who's Mike Randazzo, also listening in for the Miller Miller audition, and Josie the Outlaw. Cool. We got the whole Philly
like
crew.
Her. She's
good people.
She's clicked like on things before of mine, so yeah, we're good friends. I actually tried to meet her at Porkfest, but she was going somewhere, and her dog growled at me, so I didn't try to run, catch her, touch her.
Don't bring your dog to Porkfest. That is my advice to everyone.
You know, if you read the Burning Man site, there's a whole page on if you must bring your dog to Burning Man, and it's like, you know, you must have enough water for you and him. You must be willing to like drive to the vet 60 miles away, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's like a page. Literally of small print of why you shouldn't bring your dog to Burning Man and what you should do if you have to. And then the next FAQ question is, what about a cat? And the only answer is, don't even think of bringing a cat to Burning Man. It would just run away and die. Don't even.
What about anteaters? Can I bring my anteater to Burning Man?
Somebody brought a cat to Porkfest. Some guy had it on his shoulder on a leash.
I can think of certain pets that would thrive at Burning Man, though. What if you had a pet scorpion?
I was just going to say, I got bit by a scorpion at a warm-up for Burning Man. My friend's band was playing at Burning Man. They don't usually have bands, but Insecto was playing, and they went out on the salt flats in SoCal to test their pyrotechnics and do the warm-up for it the week before. And
is the warm-up for Burning Man called Kindling Man?
No, but I was like, totally relaxed, like lying on this girl's lap, playing a guitar, you know, wearing nothing but shorts and sandals, staring up at the stars, at one with the universe. And all of a sudden, it felt like somebody just rammed a burning stake into my stomach. And I went, aah! And jumped up, and like 40 people started looking on the ground with flashlights. And they're like, there it is. Like I didn't know what it was. And they all knew it was a scorpion. And then they got it. And it was tiny. It's like an inch long. It was white. The bigger and darker they are, the more poisonous they are. But they threw it in the fire so the dogs wouldn't eat it, even after it's dead. And gave me the things they give you, anti-itch medicine. What's the pill called? You know.
You get it on an EpiPen.
Yeah.
Did it help?
No, but, you know, I don't know. What is it? It's what they give you for allergies. Antihistamine, which helps. And then, it hurt for like 2 days. Felt like I've been punched in the stomach. So anyway.
Yeah, those things are no joke.
I know. So hashtag, please donate.
Indeed.
Tell me.
Taking down the scammers. So as I mentioned earlier, there's a phenomenon of people thinking, I have a podcast.
The world owes them a living. 10,000. They think the world owes them a living is what it is.
Correct.
Or at least they're going to try and see if they can get one, you know. Yeah. And not necessarily saying they're owed it, but some are give you more guilt than others. Like, you don't think my podcast is worth $3, then you're a loser, you know. Or
I don't think anything is worth $3 anymore. I mean, when you can get, you know, major motion pictures and major label albums for free, why would you think a podcast is worth anything?
Right. It's ridiculous. And yet there's this and like you said, it grows from this sense of entitlement that you get a whole living because you have a podcast and you get to make up stories and what have you.
You know what's really sad is the people who actually succeed at it for a little while and think it's going to last forever.
Yeah.
And like, you know,
I made $500 this month in donations.
Start making payments on a condo with their podcast, you know.
Yeah. Take it to the mortgage company.
Do you take Dogecoin?
All right, we'll be back with hour two of Freedom Fiends without me, with Steve flying in the co-pilot seat with James driving. Good to have you aboard, Steve.
Likewise.
Worms.
Be aboard.
Yep. Worms.
I look forward to the day when I can fire you. May it be a long time from now.
That's the first step to the presidency. You tell me you're fired, and then...
Worms.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
No ads.
It's all good.
All right. You want to do the hour two, James?
Oh, yeah. Trigger warning. It's hour two of the Freedom Fiend, broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's low-orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. I'm Jim Babb, and I'm here with Steve Miller Miller.
Hello,
newest
Jim.
Newest fiend. Great to be with you.
It is great to be fiending.
Now, the audience may not have any idea, but we've been friends for a number of years now. And
4 years.
Yeah, I met you.
Nepotism.
I met you at Occupy Philadelphia. Okay.
That is correct. 100% correct.
I have to say that was probably like the highlight of the whole Occupy movement. Like I'd say it was worth existing so I could meet people like you, right?
Yeah. So that I could meet people like you, I met you. I met Mike Salvi, formerly of Mike Salvi's World, also at Occupy. I met a lot of other people, and I had just gone for the lols. Like people went into Occupy thinking, you know, we've got these goals that we're going to pass. One of which, by the way, was the elimination of all debt. Good luck with that.
And, why not? And yeah. Well, I also met our mutual friend N.A. Poe at Occupy. So
correct.
I'd say that
N.A. Poe, yeah. N.A. Poe, an acronym that stands for not a professor of economics.
No, but he
really,
you know what, but he tries hard though.
He does.
Yeah.
Well, eye of the beholder, but yes, trying hard. Try hard is an insult in today's like internet world. You tell people like you're trying hard and they're like, oh man, I don't want to look like I'm showing effort at anything.
True.
So
true.
It's a little bit of a slight to say someone's trying.
Anyway. So you showed up for the lulls. I really showed up out of curiosity, you know, And then I realized like, whoa, there were some really like interesting, like I felt there were a small percentage of people there that were sort of reachable, and they were like, they had figured out some stuff was really messed up and they were showing up to kind of figure out what was going on. And then the other like 95% were just, you know, socialist, liberal, you know, misguided, you know, people. But
to their credit, though, they did have really practical, achievable goals, such as the elimination of all debt. And another thing that they fought for over an hour about whether to put it in the official demands or not was ending judgment. The idea that you would judge people like in your head, Occupy was going to end that.
Well, see, were you going to like the official meetings or whatever? Like, what did they call those things? I forget.
General Assembly, GA.
Oh, wait, if God. You eliminate all judgment, that means all things have equal value in the world, which means everything happens at the same time and you don't have any choice or decision-making capability. You would basically eat mud or waste material because you don't want to judge it as not as good as a steak.
Well, and I think you just really like nailed the Occupy movement, at least.
Yeah.
I mean, the funny thing is like, I think I went to one of those like things just to see what was going on. And it's this sort of like, you know, this is what democracy looks like. Basically people not being able to do anything. And I realized like, okay, these people are all nuts, but thank goodness they're impotent. They're going to just hang out at this church and argue about stuff and try to get consensus, which will never happen. And they basically just never, I don't know what they did. Eventually they just left, I guess, when the mayor announced he was putting in a skating rink where their tents were.
Yeah, yeah, they got iced over.
He should have put in a picture of Grace Bedell. You know, she was probably sending letters to all those founding fathers and presidents and stuff. She probably was doing something with Benjamin Franklin, don't you think?
Hey, you know what?
Benjamin Franklin died in 1790.
I know,
maybe.
I'm messing with you. All right.
Sorry. I think let's do a letter writing campaign.
Franklin never existed.
Oh,
a Franklinist.
Let's do this. Let's write a letter, do a letter campaign to Joe Biden suggesting he should grow a beard. Okay. And see if we can get him to grow a beard.
Potential. Yeah. How many letters do you think it would take?
I don't know. If he got to meet, he could potentially meet a young girl and, I don't know. Biden.
No Joe. I met him once. Checked him into a hotel. I checked a lot of people into hotels. I checked in Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who was Obama's pastor that was involved in the thing. And yeah, he had a rider a mile long. I'm like, yo, dude, like you're a clergyman. And he's like forwarding a list of demands to the hotel before he gets there.
Well, he's a guy that sort of strikes me as one that can really make it big and lives a lucrative, you know, like rich lifestyle as a church guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Celebrity church guy. Right.
And here's the thing, like maybe I could be a televangelist, but I don't look like a Buick salesman. And I feel that a really essential part of being a televangelist is looking like you want to sell somebody a used Cutlass Supreme, which is an Oldsmobile. But yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's essential to the look.
I don't know. Yeah. He had like a different look, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, people like Obama were willing to follow him. So,
yeah. Well, that was for context, too. You know, that gave him, like, Obama definitely benefited by being there.
It was just for the, it was sort of like his version of Skull and Bones. Like, it was just for the contacts and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. What now, are you going to do?
You used to be a school teacher in Philadelphia. Is that correct?
I did Teach for America. And if you remember nothing else of this podcast appearance, remember, don't ever join Teach for America. If this becomes an issue in your life where you're like, oh man, I'm going to go help out those children in the inner city or the native reservation or whatever. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it.
So what is Teach for America? Is it like the Peace Corps for teachers to go into these third world schools like Philadelphia and try to help them out?
That's precisely what it is. And for 2 years I was in Southwest Philadelphia and I had a gun pulled on me by a parent. Womp, womp. And yeah, there were just fights every day. You learn important lessons though. Like I learned how to get the kids suspended so that they would be suspended in tandem. And a lot of it has to do with seating charts. So what you want to do if this ever becomes an issue for anybody listening is if you've got 30, you've got 32 kids in your class, because that's the maximum that they can put in there by law. So they jam it packed. And what you want to do is you want to put your most annoying kid next to your fightingest kid. And you want to put them in the back of the room. And then you want to put like a ring of larger, preferably fatter children around them so that when they start fighting, they form like a human wall to stop you from getting back to the fight. So that assures the fight goes on for a little while. And the longer the fight goes on, the more days of suspension they get. So you could get them out for like a good week or so if you like really plan your seating chart well.
Which is actually the best thing that could happen for those kids. From what I understand of Philadelphia schools, like anytime you're not going to be in those classes, it's probably a good day.
Oh, it was completely symbiotic for everyone. I didn't want them there. They didn't want to be there. And not only that, they were going to learn business skills if they weren't going to be in my classroom, you know?
Right. So it was interfering with their education. It was disruptive to the people that maybe did want to be there for some reason. It was a waste of everybody's time. Put that stupid nerdy kid in danger. Yeah.
Yeah. What was he doing? You know? Oh, you know, I have a couple kids that went to college, but I have a lot of former students that met the Pope because the Pope visited the jail in Philadelphia. And I was like, oh, snap. I know exactly the kids that Francis is going to meet. Have fun with that.
Mm.
Yep.
You know, they talk about this like school to prison pipeline in Philly. Is that a real thing?
I think they should build it because it would create jobs.
Just to, yeah, just Well, I've always just thought that maybe that we could just merge the systems together, right? Because if you look at, like, there's so much in common between these government schools and the government prisons.
Yeah.
That, you know, if for our minarchist friends out there, they want to see government be more efficient. Well, why not just put them together and have like one set of guards, one set of, you know, inmates, you know, get people into the system early and just leave them there.
And you could just make it progressively more difficult to escape from each one. Like, it's pretty easy. You could just walk out the door of a middle school if you don't really want to be there. And then in about 45 minutes, they'll realize you're not there anymore. And that gives you a good lead time to get out of there.
Right.
Escaping from a high school could be a little more difficult. You know, maybe you have like an armed guard, there's just one of him and there's several exits to the building. And then, you know, you get to, you know, juvie, and then juvie's a little harder. And then you get to, you know, minimum security, medium security, maximum security, super max. All these things come in degrees. And, you know, and if you teach people to escape early, then they're going to become better at it necessarily.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, that could be some important life skills they could learn. But I mean, look at the cuisine. I mean, now, isn't it pretty much prison grade food at the schools right now? Or is it school grade food at the prisons? Or how would you really describe that?
I'm pretty sure it's the same contractor, actually. I'm not kidding about that in the slightest. I'm 80% sure it's the same people. And
Michelle Obama personally select the menu?
She comes in with a hairnet every morning and hands out everybody's food.
Nice.
Yep. Nice. Adam's apple and all.
That's another I don't think we should touch that possible conspiracy theory, but that's a big one out there, isn't it?
There's a lot of people that used to be
a dude. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm fine with that. If she did, I'm not going to judge her for it.
Yeah. Well, it's similar to the flat earth. Like, all right, like you proved Michelle Obama's a man. Now what? You know? Like, okay. All right, the world's flat. I'm going to go not fall off. Like, I'll be sure to like watch Freddy Edges.
Yeah, just don't go to Antarctica, because that's where the end of the world is, right? I have people on my Facebook that are Facebook friends that they really believe that flat earth stuff. They're like, hey,
I'm Facebook friends with Eric Dubé, who's the leading flat earth researcher. Eric, if you're listening, hello, what's up?
Researcher? They do research?
Yeah. He goes out, he looks over the horizon, sees that it doesn't curve, writes a Facebook post about it.
There you go.
Man. Worms.
Such good stuff. All right, so we'll get back into your school teaching when we come back from the break.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends. I'm Jim Babb with Steve Miller. So we're talking about Philadelphia government schools. I'm not a big fan myself. I don't think you are either, from what it sounds like. And you had some pretty intimate experiences there.
You can only get so many guns put in your face before you start chatting against it. That's the thing.
Wait a minute. I thought the schools were gun-free zones and whatnot. They
are.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Well, school wasn't in session when it happened, though, so I guess it's fine.
Oh, okay. But, you know, we're not fans, but, you know, we have some mutual friends that seem like they really are fans of government schools in Philly. And they have made some public statements to the fact that they think weed should be legal in Philly and should be heavily taxed so that those awful schools could get more money from weed smokers. Okay. And I'm like, well, you know, yeah, it'd be nice to have weed being legal in Philly. That would make a lot of sense. But do we have to hurt children to make that happen?
Like, furthermore, it's the hymnal duster theory. And let me explain what the hymnal duster theory is. So okay. when I was a kid, I was growing, I was a member of a church youth group, and they had this youth pastor who, in retrospect, was extremely gay. And every time we would do something fun, like we'd have a basketball game, like we'd play capture the flag, like whatever Lord praising activity you have that's fun. And then because we did something fun, we necessarily had to do something for the church, which typically involved dusting hymnals. And it's the same theory writ large. Like, you enjoy smoking marijuana? Well, you better fund all these schools then. And the sad thing is that it's the people smoking weed that are falling over themselves to pay more for weed in this like sort of ever back end effort to add meaning. Like, hey, I've spent the last 8 years sitting on my couch smoking marijuana, but man, I sure funded some schools, didn't I?
Well, that kind of idea. I got a quick summary here of Philadelphia schools, and this is what they think the money should go to. Okay, and this is just 1 year. This is the year, the 2011 and 12 school year. In Philadelphia government schools, 2,310 assaults on students and staff, 15 rapes, 166 incident assaults, 86 robberies, 157 thefts, and 566 weapon possessions. Okay? That's the success. Okay?
Okay. It's worth noting that one of the few documents I saved from my teaching career, I saved a couple essays that kids wrote that were just hilarious. And then the only official document I ever saved was a write-up that I got from a faculty meeting. And my school, Tilden Middle School, 66th and Elmwood represent, was named the number one most violent middle school, not just in Philadelphia, but in the entire state of Pennsylvania. And I started the "We're Number One" chant.
There you and go. Hey, everybody's got to be number one at something, right?
And there was a section where you could write your response to the write-up, and my union rep had advised me not to write anything. But what I wrote was in all capital letters: "Our kids finally succeeded at something, and you want to take that away from them."
Oh, that is so harsh, but it's the truth. I mean, what we're looking at, I'm looking at some of these benchmarks. Only 20 to 30% of Philadelphia students can read or do math at grade level. Okay. This is suspensions, out of school suspensions.
Is this at their grade level or at any grade level?
At any grade level, yeah. Out of school suspensions per 100 students is overall, well, let's see, if you're white, for white kids, it's only 14 out of school suspensions per 100 students. For the black kids, though, it's 33.6 suspension. So it's like between two and three times as likely to get an out-of-school suspension if you've got dark skin in Philadelphia. So it's racist, it's violent, it's incompetent, it's horrible. Okay, I mean, just a horrible, horrible place for teachers, students. And
but I never I never suspended one white kid. You know what else I ever did? Never did taught a white kid.
Okay. Well, what about Hispanic kids? Hispanic kids get it a little bit better they get suspended more than the white kids, but not as bad as the black kids.
I had one Hispanic student, and he went to Yale, if I remember correctly.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that kid was going to make it. I never had to suspend him or even come close. His dad was not but you could tell by the parents, like, how the kids were going to do. Because even before the first day of school, like, that kid's dad was on the phone with me, like, talking about, like, you know, this, that, and the other. And here's what my son's into. Here's what he likes to read, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You knew that kid was going places. But in most cases, come on.
Worms.
Worms.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Live from Philadelphia, this is Steve Miller Miller with the Freedom Fiends. With the Freedom Friends. The Freedom Fiends. With
feed
me,
with
James Babb.
Feed me some freedom.
Feed me. Feed me.
Thank you, fun.
Meow. James Babb. We're
all
back
right.
Break.
We didn't tell him about the 6 second rule yet, did we? What we're saying is so important, James, and this is true,
yeah.
That if we stop talking for 6 seconds, alarms go off at our network.
Yeah.
It's not that we're really that important. It's just that something being said is important on radio. So,
right.
Yeah, man, keep it going.
There you go.
Extremely crucial that we talk about how people in Philadelphia are going to save these schools that are warehouses for violent criminals by smoking weed.
Yeah.
Right, well, that's the theory where we're getting.
Let there never be 6 seconds without that going on.
Right. I think we did a good sort of summary as to what really Philadelphia schools are all about. They're failing at teaching. They're hurting children. They're racist. It's just a dismal, awful place to be.
And when they're not hurting children, they're hurting children.
Nope, they're actually hurting children.
Not mutually exclusive, I can tell you from firsthand experience.
Yeah.
And they're getting valuable life lessons, like, you know, how to get patted down. And they do stuff.
Nobody
like, do
gets remember, patted down. That's part of the problem.
do you remember this was maybe like 5 or 6 years ago. They had like a 10-year-old girl. They were doing a random like drug search or something. And they found in this girl's backpack a pair of scissors. And they said, well, zero tolerance. Better get the police in here. They carried out this 10-year-old girl in handcuffs, crying in front of her classmates, dragged her out. Okay. Like, that's what they do to people. They have.
She wasn't smart enough to make a clock.
Right. She just was into crafts and had just regular scissors, hadn't even pulled them out of her own backpack, wasn't like waving them at somebody. Wasn't running with scissors, was just had them in her backpack. They randomly search and then had to have the police drag her out. Now, if that's not preparing these kids for life in Philadelphia, I don't know what is. But
one day,
it just breaks my heart, though.
One day when I was teaching, this was like the day before Christmas break, the principal gets on the announcements and he says, attention students, sorry for the interruption, but this might be an unusual announcement, but there is an extremely rancid smell coming from the seventh grade locker bay. And if you think that the rancid smell might be coming from your locker, we would encourage you to go take care of it now. Otherwise, we're going to have to start going through lockers until we find the source of this smell, because people are being nauseated by this smell. And I remember telling my class, like, okay, listen, if any of you have anything contraband, what you need to do is go get it out of your locker right now, because literal cops are probably going to show up about this smell because they're going to think it's a dead body or whatever. So go get it. So I write all these kids hall passes. They go down.
Good for you.
They get the stuff out of their lockers. They bring it back to the room, and then they discover that what had happened was one of my students, geniuses that they are, thought, you know what? I am not going to drink this second carton of milk. Why don't I put it in my locker for a couple weeks? And they left a milk carton full in their locker for weeks.
Okay.
And
I was bracing for the worst.
There's an economics term for that. You know, like when governments, let's say when they say we're going to deal with the rat problem by paying $2 per rat tail, people start breeding rats to sell the tails to the government. What's the term for that, James? There is an economics term for that. Unintended consequences, but it's something else.
Yeah.
Law of diminishing returns.
I, That's Mr. I'm Poe. Not even going to compare Philadelphia school students to rats. Okay, I don't think they're being bred for that purpose. Right. So I don't think that's a fair analogy.
No, I didn't mean it, tax cow is more appropriate.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but anyway, so we've really got a tough situation. Now, the other kind of weird thing is that surprisingly, they're always like hundreds of millions of dollars in the red in Philadelphia's schools.
Shocking.
Yeah. So they're always crying. Oh, if we only like the people say, but you stink. You're horrible. Like, but if we had more money, we could stink even bigger. I think it was about 10 years ago we got the liquor by the drink tax. Do you remember that? I don't know.
I remember it was around the same time that they banned smoking in bars.
Oh. Well, this was maybe a little older than that, but they said they had this problem. They're like, well, what are we going to do? Well, hey, let's just nail drinkers. People come in and go to a bar. We're going to nail them with an extra 10% by the drink tax. Screw you, drinkers. You're going to be the ones, and you're going to save our schools. And like, this will finally fix it. We will always have enough money now. We're going to make those drinkers pay. Okay.
You're drunk. Go dust my hymnals.
Fast forward, okay, 10 years, and now, like, hey, we're still broke because we squandered all the money on metal detectors and child-sized handcuffs. So now we need,
where
can we get more money? Hey, we've got those, look at those God. Dirty hippies and their weed. Could we get $100 million out of them? Well, sounds reasonable to some people.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculous.
I don't know. How much weed do you think Philadelphia will need to smoke to save these schools?
I think that you could take the city of Philadelphia, demolish all the houses, plant weed farms, have the entire city of Philadelphia be acreage for the weed farms, and it would still not create enough tax revenue.
No. Well, people might be shocked by this. The annual budget of these Philadelphia schools is like $3 billion. It might be even be more than that.
It's hundreds of millions, yeah.
It's massive. No, it's billions of dollars with a billions, B.
Yeah.
So, yeah, smoke up, Philly.
Yeah. Do your part.
Well, but, you know, we hear this a lot, don't we, with weed legalization. People act like the tax revenue is like a benefit. Like we've heard it in Colorado, people are like, hey, not only is weed legal, but they're making so much money. They got hundreds of millions of dollars of extra money in Colorado. Woo, and they're celebrating this and they're celebrating this like wholesale theft. And what I don't understand is these people that are supposed to be like cannabis activists, and they're supposed to be like, you know, fighting for cannabis users, are the ones cheerleading for this shakedown. I really don't get it. Can you explain that to me, Steve?
Well, Jim, this is not at all unforeseeable because you and I have both been at protests, and you know which ones I'm talking about, where people say, on the one hand, F the law, smoke it anyway, and on the other hand, oh, make sure you call your legislator to get this law passed that we really want.
Yeah, I guess that is the dichotomy, right? It's like, hey, you're, man, like, sucks, you're, you want to fight the man. Yeah, you want to fight the man, and then you also want to like pal around with them or have coffee with the police and talk about stuff. You know, I don't get it.
Neither do I, not in the slightest. But I was cut out for activism.
Well, you are cut out for a very specific type of activism, which of course is being a comedian, right?
I'm a Lulbertarian. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know Jim Jesus?
Yeah, I know Jim.
You know Jim Jesus, right, Steve?
Yeah.
Via Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a new show, new podcast called Lulberts.
Really, oh, nice. Really good.
If Jim's listening, yeah, I think he should have you on.
I'll go on Lulberts.
Right. Cool.
Jim Wasn't Jesus. That the name is... of an Atari game?
He uses Fiend Phone, too.
Oh, nice. Nice.
He is probably one of the, I think he may be the most hilarious fiend. Jim Jesus is just, When I do shows with him, I'm literally like my gut hurts from how funny he is. So yeah, subscribe to that.
Yep. Jim, you wanted to do a dramatic reading, if I recall correctly.
Did I lose you guys?
Are you, I'm here.
I'm here, and I hear you both.
All right.
Speak up, Jim. Jim, speak up like you're on radio, son.
Hey, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Boom.
Can you rest,
with
Jim?
Authority, Jim.
Whoa.
Okay, ignore him. My we lost
volume
him.
Went down on Steve. So anyway.
Can you hear us?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
James, go on like you're on radio. Like that never happened.
All right. I'm back. Aha. The drone Boom. Strike missed. And anyway. So
luckily it hit a children's hospital, not us.
Or a Doctors Without Borders hospital.
And that happened this week. Yeah, the U.S. government killed a bunch of Doctors Without Borders in Afghanistan, a bunch of innocent children, all to try to get some guy who may or may not have been a threat.
When reached for comment, Bernie Sanders said, "See what happens when you don't have borders?"
Yeah, it's a Koch brothers conspiracy.
It's a Koch brothers conspiracy.
The right, but you know it's not like the president didn't say anything after he blew up this hospital. He immediately came on TV and started lecturing people about gun violence, right?
Yeah, of course.
So it's not like he was silent. Hey, do you guys know Oregon now has recreational weed available is legally for sale? Did you know Oregon joined the list?
No, I did not know. So it's three long: Washington, Oregon, Colorado.
Yeah, well, and maybe Washington DC, maybe.
They don't have shops though. That's the thing. I think in order to be a true recreational marijuana state, you need to be able to walk into a store and just buy weed and save the schools all in one transaction.
Right. But again, it's super heavily taxed. It's like they got a 10% tax on it right now, or maybe it goes into effect. I think they're starting it out tax-free, and then like January 1st, it's 10% tax, and then there'll be extra like local taxes.
The first hit is government tax-free.
They give out samples.
Yeah. Here, this is it's for the children. Well, and I read one guy's...
What would the government weed be named? If you guys can think of, like, what brand name they'd have.
Department of Kush.
Department of Kush. There you go.
Yeah.
I like it. The Cavity Burrow. Search. They'd have a brand called Cavity Search.
Well, get this. So
the
I read
gun
a comment.
In, the gun
on,
in the room. The gun in the room.
TSA bomb.
Yeah. All right. Hey, no. Careful. The gun in the room. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. So I read this comment on the Oregon pot story, and somebody says, yeah, I went to the dispensary and they made me show my license and they photocopied it and it's now being stored in a database. Like, so they can like monitor to make sure you're not buying too much. And I'm thinking, how could this go bad, right?
Couldn't.
It's a pot smoker registry.
Nothing went wrong with registries before, ever.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of lesser world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's fiendphone.com, FEENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiendphone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends. This is our final segment, Redemption in the Third Act. I'm Jim Babb, and we had Steve Miller on the line, but I'm afraid a near-miss drone strike EMP has shorted out his satellite signal, so he'll be back with us. Steve and I are Philadelphia area libertarian activist types, and you know, we've got a really great crew around Philly, and it's something that you know, I mean, we have libertarians have a lot of these great communities, and Philadelphia. One thing that's unique about Philadelphia libertarians is we're all extremely attractive. One of our favorite libertarians, Josie Wales, or Josie the Outlaw.
I'm a heterosexual male, but I got to say, at least you two, if you're indicative of everybody, I'd agree with that 100%.
Yeah. Go on. It's, you know, it's, I'm not bragging. It's just a fact. I don't know why, but anyway, but, Josie, it's just kind of funny. We like to give her a hard time because she's an attractive woman, and she takes a good profile pic, and it'll get like 400 comments from some rather sad, lonely libertarians out there. I thought it might be fun just to maybe do a dramatic reading of some of these. This Kyle says, I'm saying this and I'm meaning it. You are the most stunning lady I know in Facebook.
Ew.
It gets weirder.
And we like her. We're friends with her. We're not saying anything bad about her. Yeah.
No.
Guys are creepy and weird. All guys. Well, most guys.
Phil says, if you don't believe in angels, then you need to know Josie.
Ew. You know, I'll tell you something that's really cool about being over 50 is just like never having to lie to women again.
Why does that change when you turn 50?
I don't know. I still like, you know, I don't need the little blue pill or anything, and I'm happily married, and like, you know, occasionally, well, not to go into any detail, but it's like my overwhelming like need that young men have to, like, you know, impregnate everything that moves to further the species is gone. Like, somehow it's just gone to where, like, if I see a woman, I'm like, this better be a meritocracy, lady. You better have something interesting to say, or I don't care who you are, you know. Okay. But that was not the case when I was younger. So I understand these idiots.
Yeah. Well, Hamilton says, I remember seeing you at Liberty Fest. Your eyes managed to steal the color out of the room. It still does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Takes my breath away again.
Yeah.
Such beautiful eyes.
Ew. You know what? Everyone has beautiful eyes. That's one of the great lies of, like, hitting on people. It's like, if you stare into someone's eyes, you basically are seeing yourself reflected in their eyes. So everyone can have beautiful eyes.
Could be. Oh, here's one. Your eyes are beckoning me. They might compel me to float across the country
in
4 days to see you.
You know, I read this interview with the singer in U2, and someone, like, the first question was like, what's it like being a rock star? And he's like, it's like being a beautiful young woman. People want to know you. And, like, those guys are not beautiful young women. They're like creepy looking 50 something guys, you know, but like, wherever they go, like, people want to show up on their doorstep and be close to them. I interviewed Henry Rollins one time, and he gets some intense creepy. Like, he said he had to call the police. Like, him, who could, like, beat up anybody. But I guess it would make sense to call the police. It'd be for him in L.A. Like, he had a guy, like, show up and, like, live in his bushes outside his house. How creepy is that?
That's pretty creepy. I could imagine, like, weird dudes living in Josie's bushes. Like, you're just trying to, like...
That's why she has a pit bull and a gun. It's not yeah. to fight the second American Revolution. It's to keep away the creepy guys that show up at her house when she's discussing the second American Revolution.
You know, she also lives in a like a secure and undisclosed location, so she can handle herself, as we all can.
Yep. Steve Miller got droned. He got taken away by Doctors Without Borders. I watched that show House. It's one of my favorite shows. And if you know the show, it's pretty funny. He says at one point that he's a member of Doctors Without Boundaries. Do you know that show?
I know of it, but I'm not a fan,
He's a Vicodin popping sociopath that, you know, can solve the medical mysteries no other doctor can.
Yeah. Sounds great.
It's been a good show, and I wish Steve Miller were here. We're popping champagne corks in his honor, but he fell down the woodchuck hole.
Yeah, thanks for getting him on board. It's great to have another awesome fiend.
Yep. Worms.